Well, hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Glad you could be with us today. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. Psychologist Patrick Williams will be our guest today, and he has written a couple of books that have been used in the federal prisons to assist people as they begin their planning for release and afterwards. He's got some great information for us. Patrick Williams, right after this. My name's Rodney Mathers, and you're on The Journey of Hope. Hey, man, send me some mail. Love to get that mail from you. MathersRodney@yahoo.com, MathersRodney@yahoo.com. Love to hear from you. Everybody, and welcome back. My guest today is Patrick Williams. Patrick is the author of several coaching books, two of which have been used in men and women's federal prisons. His most recent book, Getting Naked on Emotional Transparency at the Right Time, in the Right Place, with the Right Person. We're going to find out about that today. Hey, Patrick, how's it going?
Hey, excellent. Good to be here.
Well, we appreciate you being here. We always start with our guests giving us a little bit of background. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a, I like to say I'm a fully recovered psychologist after 20 years of doing clinical psychology for 20 years. And then I got into executive coaching as part of that and just found that much more fruitful. My degrees were in humanistic and transpersonal psychology. So it was always about human liberation and personal growth more than pathology and sickness. So that was my bent. When coaching started to get more popular, I went full-fledged into that in the early 90s. I started a coach training school called the Institute for Life Coach Training, which I then sold 15 years later. Mm-hmm. At that point, it was the 12th school in the world that was training people to be coaches. Now there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them.
Believe me, all of them call me.
So, and then I wrote books for the coaching profession, which was good timing because there weren't any books back in 2000. And so mine sold very well, got speaking around the world. And now I'm trying to do much more with my nonprofit called Coaching the Global Village. And that's where the work with the prisoners comes in through that.
Okay. And you had two books in the federal prisons, one for men. Were these separate books, one for men and one for women? Or
no, it's the same book. It's kind of an interesting story.
What was the focus of those books? Tell us about that, and then tell us about how they ended up there.
Okay, well, the book that was used primarily was called Becoming a Professional Life Coach, Lessons from the Institute for Life Coach Training. So that was a book I first wrote in 2007, and then a second edition in 2015, which was based on the curriculum of training thousands of master's and doctoral level people in coaching techniques over the years. Mm-hmm. And it's a well-respected book, and it got found by one of the male prisoners. And then there's another story about how it got in the hands of a woman prisoner as well. Mm-hmm. The second book was called Total Life Coaching. And that's kind of a book of tips and techniques for improving one's life in almost any area. It's a great, big, huge, thick book. It would stop a door in a hurricane, I think. But but those two books were useful for them.
Do any of those books, and do you, through your coaching, when you're working with prisoners, do you talk about reintegration and what kinds of things? What kinds of things do you address there?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Do you got time for the short story about
how
you even got? Okay, good. So in 2012. About this time of year, November 2012, I get an email from a federal prisoner in Pennsylvania, and it said from federal prisoner Talib Mustafa Shakir, and I thought, is this a hoax? You know, I mean, I have to admit, immediately I'm thinking, all right, we get a Middle Eastern name. It's touching my white bias here and unintentionally, but I went ahead and read it, and the first paragraph was just astounding. This guy had been handed a copy of my book. He'd started a coaching peer group in the prison. He just wanted to thank me for it, wondered if I could mentor him in some way, writing back and forth. And I said, absolutely. And then I found out that the warden, the assistant warden, was a woman who'd also gone to a coach training school, well-respected, called the Coach Training Institute. And she was very progressive. So she kind of was able to cut through a lot of the red tape that often shows up at federal prisons. And we ended up donating our curriculum of a 60-hour course to the prisoners and printed out at our cost. And then she trained one of them to be a co-teacher with her. So long story short, over 4 years now, we've trained over 100 men in at least a 60-hour curriculum on becoming a professional coach. So not just learning coaching, but actually taking the written exam, writing essay to us and stuff. And really, incredibly, I've gone to 2 graduations, given a keynote speech at the prison. Just tremendous success. So then the second part of your question is, do we work on the both the recidivism and reentry? Yeah, now that some of them have gotten out, they're continuing to try to work like either with probation departments or in some way where they can use their skills to talk to other either first offenders or returning citizens.
Super.
And it's minimal. I mean, we can't get a lot of cooperation from the federal government, even though this is a very positive program. Right. The Bureau of Prisons hasn't like endorsed it. The other thing that was interesting is the assistant warden, I won't say her name, but she then got promoted to director of education at the Bureau of Prisons. So I thought, oh, great, this is going to be fabulous. Well, she ran into the same red tape, and she's since retired. We trained a few staff. It's ongoing at McKean Federal Prison in Pennsylvania. We have a woman's program at a prison in Texas where one of the women also got a copy of my book.
And that's a federal prison as well?
Yes, Federal Correction Institute, yes. Mm-hmm. And it's minimal. That's a very small program, but there's a few women doing that. And the same assistant warden gave a copy of my book to a woman in D.C. who was a returning citizen, returning prisoner. And she ended up becoming the assistant to the mayor of D.C., in the Office of Returning Citizens. She actually used my book and used the coaching skills and now works with people that are coming back into the D.C. area to try to keep them from going back in.
You got to wonder how many mayors have an assistant that do that sort of thing.
Not very many.
No, I wouldn't think so. Not too many people care about people coming back out of prison is one of the problems, you know?
Well, but, that's true. Mm-hmm. The trend seems to be changing, and I hope it continues, although with our new president, we'll have to see if that continues or not.
But. Yeah, I don't think he's as high on overcrowded prisons and giving people a break as our Obama. But I don't
know.
We don't go too deep into politics here.
Well, it's not meant to be politics, but I think we have to say that the justice system does need overhauling. We have more people in prison than all the other industrial countries in the world combined. So there's something wrong.
The statistics are amazing, aren't they?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And I did 8 years and then 2 years on parole. And one of the amazing things I discovered in prison is I thought when I was getting ready to go to prison that it was people from the ghetto, that it was people from lower income, disadvantaged. And I'm going to tell you, man, there were a lot of cats like me in there that had been to college and had professional. And I don't think people know that, I don't think people understand that it's not what the public perceives, the perception is a little skewed. I don't know, but okay. So you, have worked, through your books, and did you write the curriculum that goes along with the books?
Yes, with the help of some of my faculty. I mean, there's a main course that was designed, and then the book came from that, but I had several faculty who helped make that great over the years.
Let's talk about the new book. Is this something that ex-offenders can benefit from as well?
You know, they can. And here's the connection. I mean, okay. it's an odd sort of thing. It's the first book I've written for the general public. So you could call it self-help.
Okay.
But the whole concept of getting naked, which is a metaphor for getting naked emotionally and being able to tell your naked truth to the right people at the right time, is a double-edged
message. I'm
glad
you cleared that up because there's some people that are listening to the show because they got naked at the wrong time. I'm just saying. Okay.
That's a good point.
Okay. Anyway.
But in my years as a psychologist and also as a coach, people came to me because I was a committed listener and a professional listener, and they would often say things that they couldn't tell other people.
Right.
My goal was to get them to tell somebody else so they would not need a therapist per se, but just a committed confidant who could hear something that maybe in their past they were guilty of or ashamed of or wounded by. But in coaching, we also talked about dreams you might have given up on, things that you have greatness that never got realized. Mm-hmm. So the good and the bad hides in the shadow. Right. And this book is about living more fully and optimally, but understanding that, you know, don't be stupid. Don't share your truth with everybody just randomly, because that's not a safe thing to do.
But don't you think that it is good for someone that's going through a period of adversity to have somebody that they can talk to? It needs to be a confidant, I agree.
Yes.
But it does help to talk to people, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. That's the message in the book, is don't keep it stuffed inside.
Right.
But you only need one or two people that you can trust. And as women can tell men, often they only want to be heard. They don't want you to fix it. We just need a place to say our truth and hear it, have somebody else hear it and normalize it for us. Because, you know, everybody's got stuff that they're hiding, or everybody could have done something to get in prison. I mean, I've had some lucky scrapes in my life. If I'd been picked up for a DWI or hit somebody when I was driving home from a party drunk, that wouldn't have been a good thing.
You think about all the friends you had, and it may have been you, maybe not, but your friends and maybe even family members that had drugs on their body at some time while they were driving a vehicle.
Right.
You know, that just by the grace of God, they're not, someone who's a frequent listener to my show, you know? So,
right.
So you're right. It could have been any of us. And I'm curious about your actual, you know, going from practicing into coaching and writing. There may be some people listening to the podcast that might want to consider some coaching because of their experiences. They have something to share. How does somebody go about becoming a life coach when they feel like they have something that they can share that will benefit other people? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question, because the title coach, the profession of coaching, is not licensed, so anybody can call themselves a coach.
Okay.
But anybody can also call themselves a consultant or an author. Doesn't mean they're a good one.
Well, that's true.
So if you want to get good training, then you go to a school that's approved by the International Coach Federation.
Uh-huh.
And there's several schools, different price points, but you don't have to become certified. I think you just need to take a number of courses to get confident in your proficiency of understanding what is coaching versus what is trying to fix somebody or what is trying to do therapy. Because you can't do therapy without a license, and you don't want to take people who are emotionally fragile who couldn't benefit from coaching. But a lot of people are natural helpers, and what you find in coaching is you learn to be a better listener and less responsible for the client. You're responsible for the coaching and for the place of comfort and security and safety and confidentiality and all that. Mm-hmm. But the client is responsible for making the changes they want.
I've had some people ask me, and I don't know why they think I do this, but because I absolutely don't, but they think that I do public speaking because I have the podcast, but I don't.
Mm-hmm.
There are people that have interesting stories, maybe like motivational type talks that they could give to groups. Is that something you do along with the coaching? I mean, that's part of the coaching, right?
Well, it's actually what I'm moving more into these days, because I've mm-hmm. coached for so many years and had a full practice. I just keep about 6 or 8 coaching clients now,
mm-hmm.
but I like to do public speaking, especially based on my book. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot of speaking over the years at conventions about becoming a coach, mm-hmm. but now I'm doing speaking about, you know, living the optimal life, living on purpose, work-life, just balancing your life and passion, and just, you know, I've got funnier titles than that, but it's that point. And then with my nonprofit, I would say your listeners, if they have a story, there are places where that can be shared. They could start by blogging. They could start by sharing in their local community somewhere. Right. And then they may join up with the National Speakers Association and learn how they can get helped without a lot of money, just help from going to meetings, mm-hmm. even Toastmasters, you know, going to right. Toastmasters and things like that that are free.
Hey, somebody was mentioning earlier today if there were still Del Carnegie. Do you know?
There's a few people trained in that today, but I don't know that they do the training anymore. I think there's somebody who owns the rights to it, and it might be online.
Yeah, I haven't.
But there's a lot of things based on it.
It's good stuff. Yeah. It's just I haven't heard about it in a long, long time. And somebody asked me about it today, and I just haven't heard about it in a long time.
I think it was such an early positivity. It's probably been incorporated right. into everything from positive psychology to yes. coaching to Tony Robbins to
yes.
everything.
Wow, this is cool stuff. What we like to do here is we like to be positive and to overcome whatever adversity that we're dealing with as we come back into society. I noticed right. one of the things that you're doing is very positive. The nonprofit, y'all are all over the place. Tell us about your nonprofit.
Yeah, so 10 years ago, I started coaching the Global Village because I felt that I had coached high-powered executives for years and gotten a good hourly fee from them for years. And I even helped start the International Coach Federation. I was one of the founding members back in 95. And I said, gosh, you know, coaching's becoming more widespread out of the corporate boardroom. Anybody can hire a coach that has a professional salary. Right. But what about places where coaching could help and they couldn't afford it? So I was thinking of villages in Africa and places in Haiti and all that, you know, that. And yes. I finally realized, well, that's good. And we've done some of that, but it's also in our own backyard, wherever we live. So I do some stuff here with our local schools, with the homeless. We do some things. There's a Catholic church that reaches out in the community, and I'm training some of their parishioners in life coaching skills. So my nonprofit is meant to be available to teach the basics of coaching to any organization who wants to use it in what they do. So we don't provide coaches. We provide training in the coach approach is what I call it. And that's usually a 1 or 2 day training. Now the program that is number one on our radar right now is Project Liberation. And people can find that on the homepage of coachingtheglobalvillage.org. Right. That's our website.
It's a cool site, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. And so the number one project I'm working with now is with Ivy, who is a ex-prisoner herself. Now, it's interesting your comment you said earlier, because Ivy is a white Jewish person from New York mm-hmm. who was very white-collar, was in real estate business, mortgage business, doing quite well. And unbeknownst to her, she says then, now she says I should have known better, her husband was kind of doing a Bernie Madoff sort of thing.
Gotcha.
Smaller, but
gotcha.
Some illegal contracts and money situations. And she said, I should have known better, but I didn't ask and I didn't want to know. And so she got nailed and got 5 years in prison and got out after 4. Totally changed her life, but she will tell you for the better. So now in Project Liberation, she does groups with everything from yoga to life coaching to self-empowerment stuff with women, mostly of color, who are coming out of the prisons, and they just love her. You can see some of the pictures on the website. She's starting to do more public speaking in groups, and so we're raising money to help that project get better, and then we'll train more people. Former prisoners to be leaders of some of those groups.
What a wonderful idea.
It is. I'm excited about it very much.
You know, people that have been in prison have a unique approach to dealing with hopelessness.
Oh, well said.
And I believe that in itself is something they can share with people who are going through tough times.
Yes.
If you can figure out a way to package it and sell it, not, I don't mean monetarily, I just mean in terms of getting it out there for people to hear, what a wonderful thing. And your friend Ivy, you know, kudos to her.
Yeah.
And by the way, realtors, you'd be surprised how many realtors I met. I don't know why that realtors and chiropractors. I don't know what's up with that. But
really? That's interesting.
Yeah, kind of strange, huh? Okay. Patrick Williams. Now, I'm going to try to go through this title again because it's kind of long, but I have not read the book. It looks excellent, though, and I recommend it. Getting Naked on Emotional Transparency at the Right Time, in the Right Place, with the Right Person. And that author is Patrick Williams. Patrick, where can we find that book?
It's on Amazon, and it's published by Balboa, but you can get it on Amazon ebook. I'm doing a audiobook as we speak. It won't be ready till January, but I'm recording it, and we'll put that up with audiobooks probably by January.
That's cool. My wife, she only does audiobooks now.
You know, I'm hearing that from so many people.
I
was on
too.
A podcast that had a newsletter list of 150,000 people, and they had all kinds of comments. Is it an audiobook? Is it an audiobook? So I said, okay, well, I guess I got to do that.
Okay. Patrick, thank you so much for being on the Journey of Hope. This is a cool book. I want to recommend people go check out Patrick's site as well. Patrick Williams, thank you for being on the show today.
You're very welcome.
We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back after this. My name's Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. You can always get in touch with me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com, mathersrodney @yahoo.com. Please drop me a line. Let me know if you've got an idea for a show or if you want to suggest a guest. I'm open to that, and I've used those suggestions many, many times. I'd also like to just know how your reintegration is going. What problems are you having? What kinds of things are working in favor for you? What kind of successes are you having? I want to hear all that. So let me know how you're doing, okay? That's mathersrodney@yahoo.com. And I want to thank my special guest today, Patrick Williams, and I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? See you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.